Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. We know that most of the stuff that we buy, whether it's cell phones or kids' toys, is not exactly made to last. What a lot of us don't realize is that our buildings aren't exactly made to last either. John Oxendorf says most of what goes up today is ready to be torn down in about 50 years. Apartments, offices, government buildings. Oxendorf is a winner of the MacArthur Genius Grant and a professor at MIT. He thinks we should be learning lessons from architects of the past, from the people who built Machu Picchu and the Colosseum. John, thanks for sitting down with me.
It's great to be here.
So when you look around at how cities are built now, what just kind of makes you shake your head?
Wow. I see a lot of things that we could be doing better. In particular, if you go almost anywhere in the world, you see glass boxes. You don't see the local climate or the local culture where you are. And if you go back in time, centuries earlier, we were really building in a way that responded to the local climate much more.
Does that mean you wish you were seeing more pagodas and chalets and, you know, half-timbered homes and stuff?
Not necessarily, but I wish that we would pay attention to where the sun is in the sky in the summer and where the prevailing winds come from and orient our buildings to allow them to breathe and to use less energy.
So. And did people used to do that? And people did that 500 years
absolutely.
Ago?
Absolutely. A Cape Cod house is oriented the way it is in order to avoid prevailing winds. But also in many climates around the world, architecture developed specifically to its climate. And today, energy is relatively cheap. We can air condition our way out of any heat. And so we build glass boxes in the desert and in almost any climate in the world. And that's not very smart.
Why? When did we get into building glass boxes? And why do we do it? There must be some, you know, thing exciting about them. Or maybe is it that we really think they're beautiful or they fit a lot of people?
There is such a thing as a culture in architecture and in construction, and obviously we want to express the culture of our time. We like our architecture to be exciting and to lift up the human spirit. Much architecture today attempts to do that, but one of our major challenges is how do we do it with limited resources? And that's something that people centuries in the past were really good at because they could only use what they had locally.
Oh, so what you're saying is that people feel like we have unlimited resources now, and that's part of where these glass cities come from.
Exactly. And energy is relatively cheap. So we can burn coal at a distance far away. We can send it over power lines. We lose energy along the way. And then if someone gets a little bit too warm, rather than open a window on a day when it's 65 degrees outside.
Opening a window is a lot of work.
You're right. It's far easier to burn the coal 1,000 miles away.
Yes.
And so you can see how we got to where we are today.
Right. So at the same time that people are thinking we've got to be innovative, we've got to build these things better, is anybody saying, no, wait. Just go back to the Romans because they knew what they were doing. We don't need innovation here. We need retro, super retro.
Well, I suppose I'm saying that to some extent.
Is anybody listening?
We are learning from historical construction methods. We are studying the ways that civilizations built in the past and trying to take lessons from it. So one of the reasons Roman bridges last so long is they didn't use steel. And so the steel didn't corrode, and they were using basically mass stones or concrete.
Okay, so if we're looking then at all these semi-permanent structures that are just going to start crumbling after a few decades, is what you're saying that as we view the skylines of L.A. and Rio and Beijing, we've got a bunch of ticking time bombs on our hand? Because if that's the case, it's kind of a scary thought.
It is the case that buildings are also typically designed for about 50 years. And so
that does not seem like that long.
It's not that long. And so all over New York City, we have problems with facades of old buildings built in the 1920s, but also buildings built in the 1970s and 80s, where the exterior of the buildings are beginning to fail. And that poses a public safety risk, but also potentially an energy problem for those buildings and for their energy efficiency as well. So the short answer is that most of what we build is basically disposable. On a geological timescale, our buildings exist only for the blink of an eye. But the resources that we marshal, steel and glass and concrete from all over the globe to assemble a building for a few decades, are absolutely immense. And obviously, buildings require huge financial outlays and initial costs, and people build buildings for a simple reason, to make money. And so it's not really in the interest of a developer or builder to think in terms of centuries or to think about maintenance decades in the future. But it is in the interest of society to think about how our cities will adapt and evolve in the centuries forward.
So if you were asked by, you know, a mayor or a governor or whatever, okay, so what do cities look like then if we say we want buildings to last for 100 years, for 150, for 200 years, and maybe not 1,000 years, but you know, two or three or four times what they last for now? What would you say?
That's a terrific question. I would say that one fundamental design challenge for buildings is that they must be flexible to adapt over time. So most buildings in the U.S. are torn down on average after about 45 years. We have some buildings that are torn down after only 15 years because they become obsolete or people decide that the building's no longer needed. And so when we design buildings initially, we must think about how they adapt and change over time. That might mean a building that's set up as an office building should have the ability to become mixed use or switch to residential if the market demands it. But we also need to think very carefully about energy use in cities. And so the short answer, which is not a very exciting one, is that we need better building codes that help us think long term about maintenance, about energy performance, and about cities as living, breathing organisms rather than a single building at a time.
Are there any cities that are saying, you know, we don't want to tear down buildings after 40, 50 years. We want buildings to last longer than that. It's a pain in the neck to keep, you know, tearing down buildings. We're going to have these better codes. Yeah.
I would say yes, mostly in Europe. However, in the U.S., the preservation movement over the last 50 years, since the loss of Penn Station in New York City, which was a glorious old train station, and if you've traveled through Penn Station in New York recently, it does not really pass as glorious anymore. You know, fundamentally, we can do better at preserving what we have as part of our culture, but we can also think very carefully about buildings as a precious use of resources. And the irony is that it doesn't necessarily have to cost more money. And in particular, if you can save on heating and cooling and maintenance, you can recoup the initial costs relatively quickly, certainly within 10 years, for most building designs. So it's simply a question of will as well as financing. Do we want to build something that has the potential to last for centuries and be a low-energy building? The technological capacity is there.
One of the things we certainly see now is that architects and builders come into a community, they build something, and then they leave. The people in the community have no idea necessarily how to maintain it. They wouldn't have had any idea how to build it themselves. I know you've sort of looked at architecture that's a little closer to the community, that can maybe be maintained by the community. Talk about what that would look like.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated by traditions of construction produced by particular cultures. And one of my favorites is in the Andes Mountains in South America, where the Inca Empire had incredible construction capabilities. We think of Machu Picchu perched on the steep slopes built in stone. But perhaps their greatest achievement were hanging suspension bridges, which are the longest continually used bridges in all of the Americas. They were used for centuries. And one bridge in what is now Peru has been continually used for over 600 years.
Wow.
The bridge is made entirely out of grass, which is even more extraordinary because how could grass last for 600 years? And the answer is the grass does not, but the importance of the bridge in the community lasts. So every single year, the community has a three-day festival, and they rebuild the bridge entirely out of grass. That bridge was recently reconstructed on the Mall in Washington, D.C. as part of the Smithsonian's Folklife Festival, and really is a celebration of cultural continuity, which has maintained a single bridge for more than 600 years because it's so important to the communities on either side of the river.
Can that be extrapolated out at all? I mean, it seems incredible. But A, I can't imagine building a bridge made of grass. And B, I don't know, does that mean I can maintain my own apartment building?
Yeah. Like where you are not going to be driving over a grass bridge anytime soon. And we won't be building buildings out of grass. But what it's more of a metaphor, and it speaks to the importance of having a culture that cares about maintaining our buildings and our infrastructure. And the question is, what would it take for politicians or donors to be so excited about doing maintenance that they would want to pay for it or put their name on it rather than always building something new that could then fall down, you know, 30 years in the future? And so it's really that longer term thinking of what we value as a culture.
It seems like we face tremendous challenges because, as you said, we have cities that consume a lot of energy putting people in skyscrapers. And you've got countries like China that are building cities literally all the time, multiple big cities a month, yeah, because that's how quickly they're urbanizing.
Yeah, the growth of cities in the coming decades is such a challenge on a global scale. We're building something like the equivalent of one new Chicago every week for the next 20 years. When you think about the resources, the steel and concrete and glass required to do that, and then you think about the energy required to heat and cool and operate these cities, we're looking at about half of all greenhouse gas emissions and energy consumption on the planet. And we simply can't afford to do things the way we did in the 20th century. So we need to reinvent cities in the 21st century with smarter buildings, better designs so that we think of cities more as organisms that respond to their climate, and we create comfortable habitat using as much as possible local materials, local knowledge. That is a huge challenge, but we really don't have a choice, that we have to do better.
But is your honest sense that cities in China are being built any differently than cities in the U.S. were 50, 60, 70 years ago?
Right now, they are not.
Okay.
And that's a major problem. And it's also true in many parts of the Middle East. So we're basically building gas-guzzling, energy-hog cities, which, frankly, cities are fairly energy efficient on an individual scale because people are living in small spaces. And so we use resources relatively well in cities. But the sheer scale of materials required to build cities all over the world means that we have to rethink where resources come from and how long they last, because if we're tearing them down after 30 or 40 years and doing it all over again, we really have a problem on a global scale with limited resources.
John Oxendorf is an engineer and architecture professor at MIT. He's also a recipient of the MacArthur Genius Grant. John Oxendorf, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Tonight, down here in the valley, I'm lonesome and oh, how I feel. As I sit here alone in my cabin, I can see your mansion.